He said to him, "Whose head is this and whose title?" "I have two sermons in mind that are linked by a single idea." Don't worry, you're only getting one this morning. You're getting the first one, and the second one you will hear a little more than a month from now. What links these two ideas is this notion of seeing, or more accurately, not seeing, and the way our faith is caught up with the evidence presented to us by our eyes. But we start with this old and familiar story, the argument that comes washing up on Jesus' front porch in an effort to bait him into saying something that could be used against him. Pay at least a little attention to the details Matthew gives us about how that story happens and the people who bring that question to him. It's people from two different groups who do not see eye to eye at all on anything except a shared suspicion of this itinerant teacher who is getting all the attention. They see the same problem ahead of them. The problem is Rome. But they have bitterly opposed ideas about what to do about that problem. The Pharisees are those who think that what the Jewish people need to do is to be more rigorously religious, to be more strict in their observance. They need to be people of such religious discipline that they ignore the rest of the world, and especially the fact that their city and their nation is ruled by a different power, the Roman Empire. To the Pharisees, any compromise with the power of the day is a religious heresy. And therefore, the answer is to ignore those Romans as though they were not there and strictly to follow the dictates of their tradition. Then there's the Herodians. They have a very different view. Their power, their position, their comforts, their lot in life all comes from the fact that they are clients of King Herod, the Jewish puppet king that the Romans keep propped up in order to give the Jewish people a feeling that they're still their own nation somehow. Herod is nothing more than a figurehead. He has no effective power, and his whole position depends on keeping the Roman officials persuaded that he's really on their side. So the Herodians want to do something else. Their strategy is a go-along-to-get-along strategy. The Pharisees want to make the Romans go away by ignoring them. The Herodians think somehow they'll go away by a strategy of appeasement. About the only thing they have in common is a view of Jesus as a problem. Because Jesus keeps talking about a different kingdom, another power structure, one that has nothing to do with either the religious hierarchy of the Pharisees or the military power of the emperor. So they're trying to draw him out a little bit in this trumped-up argument. And Jesus is having nothing of it. Now, the other priests in the house, Peter and Rob and Lauren, all know that this text has been preached in a few different ways over hundreds of years, as an argument for obeying the civil authority, as a teaching about the responsibilities of citizenship, as an insight into the separation of powers between this world and God's realm. Except, of course, that this world is God's realm too. So there must be something else up here. And to get to that, think about the story from Exodus that Jan read for us this morning. Here is Moses, our great ancestor, having a conversation with God that I must tell you, friends, has a very familiar ring to it to me. Moses has had some pretty powerful experiences along his path of faith. He has seen great signs and been a part of amazing works. He's gotten his people safely out of Egypt. And now he wonders whether God is still there with him. Because the people are getting restless. They are losing interest. They are not so sure about Moses anymore. Before there was drama and fireworks and amazing signs, and now there is just desert and confusion and a seemingly endless road ahead. They thought they were getting the promised land. What they got was the prolonged hike. Brothers and sisters, I know how Moses feels. I know what it's like to spend a lot of your time in prayer, praying for some kind of ability, some word, some idea to inspire all of you, to increase our energy and our joy, to strengthen our collective commitment to this place and what it stands for. I know what that is like. And Moses, you know, he just wants a little sign. He just wants a little reassurance, a little bit of proof that God is still with him. If you're really there, if you're really for us, if you really want me to lead these people, just show yourself to me. Let me see you. Throw me a bone already. But what Moses learns about the God who sent him is that God is not a God that does personal appearances. That God is not a God of coins or plaques or podiums or publicists. That God, the God of the universe, the God that is the source of all that is and all that will be, the God that both fills and embraces all of time and space, that God is not there to be seen. That God is a very different kind of reality. The God that made us and whom we are called to worship with our words and our lives, with our choices and the love that we give, that God is something much more real and much more present than a figure on a coin. God is worth far more than the kinds of worship our society is most interested in and encourages most readily. Celebrity worship and self-worship. So the point Jesus is making, the point that confounds both sides of the argument that comes roiling up in front of him and tries to suck him in, that point is just this. No God worth believing in is a God that we are going to see. Not on a coin, not on a pedestal, not anywhere. And that is a little confounding to us, and not just the Pharisees and the Herodians. Because we use all kinds of images to tell the world who we are and what we are like. We want to send the right message by the brand on our clothes or the bumper sticker on our car, what kind of phone we pull out of our pocket, what kind of business card we pull out of our wallet, what kind of sign we put in our front yard, what kind of posture we adopt during the national anthem. All of it is supposed to say something about us to the rest of the world. We make meaning out of what we can see because we are people of reason and proof. Fully a third of our brain is taken up with visual information. And we spend a lot of our effort, consciously or unconsciously, putting a series of signs out into the world meant to communicate something about who we are. And we expect God to do the same. So, what are we supposed to render to this unseen God? What are we going to give to the true God, the God we cannot reduce to an image or a painting or a coin or a flag or even to a cross around our necks? We don't get the answer in a direct instruction from Jesus. What we get instead is the idea that it's something different or something larger than all of that. Jesus does not give us an answer to this question. At least not in the answer he gives to the Pharisees and the Herodians. He gives us the answer in his whole life, in the way he lives his life. And the answer he gives us is, he holds nothing back from God. He lives a life completely transparent to the work of God in him. Heart, mind, soul, strength, no possessions of his own, no ambitions of his own, and no competing allegiances to anything else. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor? Well, who is your emperor? The state? Fame? Wealth? Position? Ambition? The church? Jesus does not give a direct answer. Instead, he answers in the whole of his life, holding nothing back and trusting God entirely. That is what is God's in our life. That is what we are supposed to render to the unseen God. The gods that get seen, they may get our attention, our taxes, our time, but they should not get our worship. They should not get the best of who we are and what we have to offer, because those are the gifts that God has planted in us. And what we make of them, what we do with them, we are meant to render back to God, the giver of all. Amen.